Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the fourth pick in the NFL draft, the New York Jets select
Speech.
It's Garrett Wilson. Kayvon Thibodeau again. Kyle Hamilton in the end zone. Sauce Gardner coming in.
What is up, everybody? No, that is not the wonderful, wonderful voice of Michael Megan that you're hearing. It is I, D.A. Osorio, back with the Four Horsemen of the TOJ Draft World. Michael Megan, James Coons, Joe Billick. Fellas, one, thank you for bringing me back because I was getting bored of hanging out with Will on the TOJ live set. I was getting very bored with that. Shout out to our boy Will, host of the TOJ pod. Shout out to Steven Zanz and Steve Russo, host of TOJ Live. Fellas, we're back. We are a month and some change away from the draft, and you have brought me back like Loki in Thor Ragnarok to set the table. What is up, guys?
I'm chilling, DA. You know, let me tell you, when you first told me you weren't coming back, I said replacing you would be like replacing Aaron Rodgers with Jordan Love. Now, I do have to give a shout out to my guy, Dylan, because he's definitely brought the fire, and it looks like we replaced one heavyweight with another. But man, I miss you, DA. How are you?
I'm good. And this will be the only time that I'll allow myself to be compared to Aaron Rodgers. It's the only time that happens. But I'm good. I'm glad to be back. I miss you guys. Meegs, how are you, my brother?
I'm good. I just want to say, Dylan, shout out to him. He was, you know, he kept telling me Jahan Dotson was going to run in the 4.3s at the combine. Didn't happen. And then he's just magically missing the next episode. I feels a little convenient, DA, but I'm glad you're back. You've been in the take chamber just, you know, waiting to burst. I'm excited what you got for us tonight.
And, you know, shout out to Dylan because, you know, heavy does lie the crown, but he has been bringing it every week. Shout out to him. James, the only under 20-year-old that I trust in this world. How are you? How is it going?
I'm good. I'm hyped for this episode. This should be really fun.
Let's do it. So for everybody listening, the boys asked me, they said, one, was I going to bring enough fire takes to do this? And normally, you know, we reserve that for Fuego, but I took four or five from him and I'm going to drop them in a minute. But we're going to take this straight from the Slack because there's been so many conversations that we've had over the last 4 months. And I got to start by shouting out Meegs because Meegs said this would happen with who I think is the best overall player in this class and Kayvon Thibodeau. Meek said 5 months ago, give it until March, and you're going to see that the folks that thought that he was that good are suddenly going to start to overthink it. And what has happened? Now we're talking about he may fall out of the top 10. Meeks, please tell the folks why you knew that was going to happen and whether folks are crazy to talk about him falling outside the top 10.
I mean, it's fatigue. Everyone likes the shiny new toy. Aiden Hutchinson's a very good player. He had, a stronger season. Michigan had a great year. He deserves to be talked about as among the top edges in this group. Trevon Walker, you know, he blew up the combine, and now he's the toast of the town. You know, he did all the drills. He had a crazy three cone. Crazy, crazy, crazy athlete. Pass rush still needs some work, but there's an exciting player there. And I think, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau was billed as, since his freshman year, that he was going to be a guy who could contend for a number one pick in the draft. He was one of the second or first best high school recruit coming out of California. I think people are just bored. They're looking for things that, frankly, I don't see. They're saying he's stiff. They're saying he lacks bend. I find that hilarious to talk about that in this pass rusher class, which isn't exactly full of Brian Burns and Von Millers. But KT, he's the best player in the draft to me. if the Jets pass on at four, I really don't know what Joe Douglas is thinking, and it's really just as simple as that.
We will storm the refrigerator box that is MetLife if they do that. Joe, you were shaking your head as Meigs was saying this, and I will say I'll drop a real fire take right now because you mentioned, you know, Trayvon Walker, the edge from Georgia, who has been the talk of the town. And I will let you guys know, I updated my big board today, and I just need to transfer it to the spreadsheet. Trayvon Walker is the 51st player on my big board. 51. Okay. And I'm going to lay it out for you. He sits two spots behind a Joe Belichick favorite, who I'm going to go to him, Nikki B, the edge from Oklahoma. So, Joe, let's talk Kayvon. Let's talk edges. Because you were shaking your head as Meigs was talking about your boy Aiden Hutchinson, who you called your shot on 4 months ago.
Well, Meigs keeps saying that people are overthinking it, but that's not really what it is. People have actually dove deep into the film and have found some flaws. And people are trying to figure out who is the best prospect for their team. And they're not just going to go on hearsay or hype. They're actually going to do the work. And that's what I did. And I've watched a number of games of Kayvon Thibodeau, and there are a lot of things to dislike. His effort, like Daniel Jeremiah described, definitely is lacking at times. His technique sometimes is definitely exposed, especially when an offensive lineman beats him to a spot when he's rushing to the outside. And listen, he's not this perfect prospect that people are making him out to be. I actually called him a highlight reel prospect. And that's some guy who has otherworldly plays, ridiculous plays that you put together, a bunch of clips, you put it on YouTube, and you're like, wow, this guy's amazing. But when you really dive deep, like I said, there is some reservations there. There's no question about it. I don't think it's crazy for Joe Douglas to skip on him. I do think he is an incredibly talented player, but this overthinking and kind of backtracking on Kayvon because we're bored, it's just not the case. We just really happen to dive deep, like I said, due to homework. And I'm sorry, Meigs, like Kayvon isn't this guy that you're making him out to be. Like, he's great. I'd be happy with him at four, but dude, there are better prospects, better edge guys in this class. And one of them is most definitely Aiden Hutchinson. That's for sure.
Oh, so you're telling me you got KT edge three now?
I said Aiden Hutchinson, Meigs. I think
you said better edges. I heard edges.
Plural.
I do believe that Jermaine Johnson is more technically sound than Kayvon. There's no question. I think he is more pro-ready in that regard. I think that Kayvon is a better athlete, but Jermaine Johnson is a better run defender. Okay, Jermaine Johnson is a more complete defender. There's no question about it. Does Kayvon have more upside as far as pass rushing skills? I do think he has more upside in that regard. I do. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't kill anybody for putting Jermaine Johnson ahead of Kayvon Thibodeau. Not at all.
Let me ask you, Joe. You're dancing question, around Joe. This. It sounds like you're
gonna
do it.
I was gonna say it sounds a lot, you know, like you hitting the salsa on us. Today, you're in the war room with Joe Douglas. You're sitting on the clock at four. You're taking Jermaine Johnson over Kayvon Thibodeau?
I am not.
Okay. All right.
That's all we needed.
That's all we needed.
I'm just saying, if Joe Douglas did it, I wouldn't complain, and I would completely completely understand it.
So I will tell you, if Joe Douglas did that, I would make Florham Park look like a January 6th insurrection. That's what would happen. I'd be up there with my boys. We'd be shutting that down real quick. James, hit me with some edge talk, man. I've been waiting. I know. You know, Joe has been giving you a hard time because you were born in, you know, the end of the 90s, Y2K, whatever, like, you know, every
he hasn't worn, actually.
Yeah, dude, James is so much, yeah, James
so much younger than the rest of us, so much younger than the rest of us. But what are your thoughts on this edge thing? Again, like, I find it insane that we're talking about, for me, in my opinion, pound for pound, the best prospect in this class falling out of the top 10 based off intel that, you know, folks who steal from kids are hearing. Go ahead, James.
Jesus. Okay. I mean, I know I came in saying I was going to say some outrageous stuff, but I don't know if I could top some of that. What I will say is, like, who actually cares about, like, run defense in 2022 with, like, top edge prospects? Like, I get that you need to field a roster, but I feel like the whole Trayvon Walker thing has gotten a bit out of hand. The one thing I think you can point to with him is that if you look at his athletic testing, you know, they have this metric called RAS. I think it's like relative athletic score. And his score, which is a 99 or 9.99 out of 10, is like one of the highest that's ever been recorded. And if you look at people who have scored that perfect 10, basically everybody pans out. So that's the one thing I would point to if I were making the Trayvon Walker argument. I think with regard to Kayvon, I think it's kind of the narratives around him are a product of kind of like people are tired of talking about him. And I just disagree with, like, I think just because somebody has a big personality, like, doesn't mean that you should just go around like slandering their character and making all these assumptions based on like your preconceptions of what somebody, you know, with that type of personality is going to be like on the field and off the field. So, you know, overall, like, I'm still a Kayvon guy. I think Trevon Walker is interesting, but not really meriting a serious discussion at four. And yeah.
The one thing we talk a lot about when it comes to Joe Douglas is character. He loves high character guys. So bringing that stuff up about Kayvon, I think is legitimate. I think it's something we should talk about. Is he really a Joe Douglas guy?
But why would, so I guess my question, because I think I agree with James said, my question would be then, why is it somebody who has a big personality, suddenly like a character issue kind of guy, right? Because, like, you know, we were talking about Deion Sanders before we came on. Deion didn't have character flaws, and he was a big personality, like, and even now he's still a big personality, right? So I think, you know, like, Kayvon's not Jamal Adams, right? Like, and that's, I think that's the like, when I think about big personalities that are detriment to their teams, I think of Jamal Adams. Like, Jamal Adams is a guy who brings a lot of attention to himself and then cries victim when it doesn't work out. I don't get that vibe from Kayvon at all. Like, Kayvon doesn't strike me as that kind of dude. You know, unless, you know, we're sitting here 3 years from now and it's like, you know, he drove his car down the wrong side of the Lincoln Tunnel or whatever, then it's like, oh damn, how would we miss that? But Joe, what you speak to that, because that's interesting. I don't agree, but I'm curious your thoughts.
I think the difference between Deion Sanders and say Kayvon Thibodeaux, and I don't know Kayvon enough to say he has a high character.
You and him don't go to brunch together.
I just don't. But I'd go to brunch with him. Why not? Let's do it. But I just feel like Deion was more of like, he had that swag. He was like swagalicious, you know? Yeah. And Kayvon sometimes seems a little bit more on the douchey side. If I'm going to be completely realistic with some of the stuff that I've seen and heard, I mean, it's just true. I mean, like, that's the biggest difference between those two guys. Like, you could have a big personality and not come off like a douchebag. And I think sometimes, like, Kayvon to certain people might actually come off that way.
But who cares?
Well, Joe Douglas cares. Joe That's Douglas what I'm trying to say. Care. Joe Douglas cares about
Joe this. Douglas drafted Joe, Ashton Joe Douglas, Davis. Like, who cares what he thinks?
Joe Douglas 100% cares about who he's bringing into the locker room and how they're going to interact with the other players. There's
you know
who's, no
you
doubt.
Know who seems like a douche? The quarterback he took second overall, and he still no took him. He still took him.
That's a good point, CA.
He still took him. You know, so but it is interesting. I like the point that you made about just like how, I mean, everybody perceives things differently, right? Like, someone may look at Kayvon and say, you know, some of Meeks, you mentioned Myles Garrett and his love of poetry and how they started slandering that in his draft class. Like, people find weird shit to slander, man. I think that's
because my man likes some dinosaurs. They thought Mitch Trubisky should go one overall. We don't forget. We right. don't forget.
I want to switch to the other side of the ball because we talked about edge and we got, you know, we have Joe, you know, and we all have. So I'm going to start with, you know, Joe's favorite offensive lineman prospect, as far as the slack can tell. And that is Tyler Linderbaum, the center from Iowa. Okay. So we're going to go around the horn here. James, I'm going to start with you. What is the absolute highest you would take Linderbaum? The absolute highest, like you're like, okay, you know what? If I got him at 15, that's great value. And you would not want to go any lower than that. What's the absolute highest you'll take?
I'd probably say like 18.
Okay. Meeks?
35.
Top of round two. Joe?
I talked about this with UD in the Slack once, even early on before the Giants had their coach. And I said, I never thought that Tyler Linderbaum would be a top 10 pick because I feel like he's more of a I think he is a versatile player. I think he can play in multiple schemes. I think he just needs to put on like 10 more pounds and he could probably play in a little bit more of a gap heavy team if he had like bigger guards surrounding him to help him out. But he is a little bit more of a perfect fit for the Jets team and like a wide zone. And that's why I didn't think, or I couldn't see a team within the top 10 that would really end up taking him who needed a center. So I felt like he would probably be able to be had in that 15 to 20 range. And I think the Jets could still get him in that spot if they decided to trade down from 10. So I think that's a sweet spot for him.
Yeah. So Meigs is the only one that's like never in round one. Absolutely not in round one. Meigs, how come? What's your issue with Linderbaum?
Tyler Linderbaum is a scheme specific prospect. The Jets do employ his scheme, but it's basically just a simple market thing where it talks about the demand. Does every single team in the NFL run outside zone? No, they don't. If you look at it, I would say there's probably around 12-ish teams. I would have to count them all in my head to see that he would really be the center for. And I don't think that you have to use one of your first round picks to take a center that's going to be playing in your scheme, because let's just call it how it is. I like Robert Saleh. I like Michael Fleur. Tyler Linderbaum's rookie contract, if he's taken in the first round, is 4 years, and then we pick up fifth-year option, it's 5 years. If they're not here and the next coach wants to run a different scheme, do I know if Tyler Linderbaum fits it? He could, because Tyler Linderbaum's an incredibly talented football player, but I'm not going to say 100% he's going to be an elite center in regards to whatever scheme he plays in, because I don't think he's transcendent in that way. So that's why when you talk about all the holes on this team with safety at corner, at edge, that I wouldn't use a first-round pick on a center with that ambiguity.
The whole thing is, you see, even in the past, centers have certainly played like even under 300 pounds. I think it was Jeff Saturday who talked about how he would go and get measured and put like a 5 pound weight in his pants just so he would get to that like 305 pound weight that his coaches want him to play at. But he was clearly somebody who was like under that. So I think, like I said, Linderbaum is scheme versatile. He's just better for the Jets offer. He's better for a wide zone. He's more perfect for that. But could he actually do it? Like I said, if you have help around him in those guard spots, he absolutely could. So I don't think that that's an issue, Meigs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, so I like Linderbaum as a player. I don't think he makes it past Baltimore at 14. I think that's probably as far as he goes. I'm with James, though. If I could get back, like, say Philly wanted to go up for somebody and we could get to, like, the 19th pick and then some extra assets, I'd take him at 19. I think that's really good value for him. Meigs, you with your, I don't know if Robert Saleh is going to be here, and Will with his, if Zach Wilson has six bad games, the Jets are going to be worried. I'm now starting to think that you guys are the ops. I'm very worried about that.
I mean, I actually agree more with Will's take about Zach, that if Zach literally had, if Zach's season next year is like 10% better than this one, the Jets are probably going to be looking at the veteran quarterback market. Because Joe Douglas is good. I really do think it's like that is a real possibility just because of how the NFL is trending. And if you really don't show anything in your 2 years, I think teams are going to look at it as like you're basically making a wish that he just turns it around in the third year. Yeah. So I don't disagree with that with Will. I just think, you know, like Robert Saleh, I like. Mike LaFleur, I like. But Jets to go 4-13 last year. Like, I do think there should be some room that this might not work out and this regime might not have all the answers.
That's fair. So I'm sticking with the Linderbaum question, but I'm going to pair it with another prospect, Kyle Hamilton, safety from Notre Dame. So we talked about this in my second to last episode where I don't know if you guys remember, but I said, who's the one guy that you think is going to be absolutely hyped over the next year? And James said Kyle Hamilton. So kudos to him. If the Jets are sitting at 10, I'm going to pose a scenario. The Jets are sitting at 10. Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum are both on the board. Who are you taking? Joe, I'm going to go to you first.
At 10?
At 10.
No trade down?
No trade down. Oh, they're God, the two. They're the two prospects on the board. They're two top rated prospects on the board.
Oh, man. That's a tough one, DA.
Is it really?
Are you probably going to say Kyle Hamilton? But I'm
going absolutely
with
not.
There's
I'm
going no with way he would say Kyle Hamilton.
I'm going with Linderbaum. I'm sorry. I think he's a perfect fit for the scheme. I think he's going to help Zach. I think he's going to help that offense run the ball. I think he's going to do exactly what we need. And that's helped make Zach better. And I think that
That is the mission.
Well, I kind of was scratching my head because I'm starting to think about the whole Kyle Hamilton situation and just, you know, how much a really good safety could potentially change this defense. So it took me a second to get there, but, you know, I'm a Lindy fan, so I'm going to take him at 10. I just feel like we don't need to take him at 10. I think that was the biggest, you know, reason why it took me a little while to get there. Yeah. But yeah, I got to go at Lindy.
So I'll tell you, I'm insulted that you said I would pick Kyle Hamilton. It's almost like you don't know me at all. So here's my argument for taking Linderbaum is that I think the gap from Linderbaum to, and you guys have heard me preach this theory the gap from Linderbaum to the next center is bigger than the gap from Hamilton to the next safety. And so in turn, if I can get a future all-pro center, and I think that is what, not pro bowler, because, you know, Meigs is in a fantasy league with me. He knows we don't count pro bowls over here. All pros.
Mac Jones made the pro bowl. We don't count
exactly
that.
Mac Jones made the pro bowl. We don't count those. But Tyler Linderbaum has all-pro potential at center, and I think so much has to go right for Kyle Hamilton to be an all-pro safety that I'd be worried about taking him. And I used this stat when I was talking to somebody on Twitter. And again, you can love or hate Pro Football Focus. I like their stats. I think they do a really good job of collecting stats. But they ranked the 32 best safeties before the season. Out of those 32, 25 of them were taken in day two. Day three are undrafted. That's it. So there is no reason for me to sit here and be like, yeah, man, I'm going to take Kyle Hamilton at 10. Because to Meigs' point about Tyler Linderbaum, right? If I take Kyle Hamilton at 10, he is automatically the fifth or sixth highest paid safety in the league. And I have to live with that. And if the turnovers don't come, what does he offer me? What does he offer my defense if the turnovers don't come? Meigs, I'll go to you and then James. If Jets on the clock at 10, Linderbaum and Hamilton, who are you taking?
I mean, this is just a doomsday scenario. But I would pick Linderbaum solely because he helped Zach. And that's it. Like, yeah. Also, I love this safety class, like, even after Hamilton. So, like, much rather we take one of those guys. So Linderbaum.
Who, what safety would you take, Meigs? Because I'm
curious. On day two, me and Joe are in lockstep on this. I think it's Dax Hill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big Dax Hill, guys.
Slot corner versatility, can cover, can hit.
Yeah. Great athlete. Yeah. Him and Sean from Georgia. I'm down with either of those guys.
And high character, to quote Joe Belichick. High character. James, how about you? At 10, sitting on the board, Linderbaum, Hamilton. Who are you taking?
Damn, I think I'm going to disappoint here.
Oh.
I think, it's like choosing between, like, do I want to drink poison or eat poison? But I think I would take Hamilton, to be honest.
Okay.
Like, I guess what I would say is, like, is Linderbaum, is he that big of, like, a upgrade over Connor McGovern? Like, not really. Like, I mean, Connor McGovern.
Are you serious, James?
Are you serious?
He's a huge upgrade. I mean, like, leave it to you to go left on this and be like, is he a big upgrade over McGovern?
The same people.
It's astronomical.
Joe, the same people who think Linderbaum would be like a big upgrade over somebody who's league average right now are the same people saying like Elijah Vera Tucker's an all pro. Like that type of stuff is like the biggest cap like I've ever seen in my entire life.
Why am I saying Elijah Vera Tucker's an all pro?
No, but like that's
because
what
I believe because I do believe that Linderbaum is an upgrade over McGovern. McGovern is one of the least, I hate saying it like this, but as far as what's going on upstairs, like he doesn't really have a good understanding of what's going on in the field. He's not the guy you want with your young quarterback. I'm sorry to tell you. Linderbaum has a much better grasp of setting protections and just understanding what the defense is doing. And he'd be, like I said, an astronomical exponential upgrade over Connor McGovern. And I think that's why the Jets are going to be in this center market for somebody like Ryan Jensen, because they understand what it means to have a center in this kind of scheme. I think that's what people are kind of failing to understand, like what a center means specifically for an outside zone and also specifically for a young quarterback. And that's why I think the Jets are going after somebody like Ryan Jensen. That's why when you look at Kyle Shanahan, that's why he brought in Weston Richburg. When you look at Kyle Shanahan, that's why he brought in Alex Mack this year, because outside zone is, or center is a lot, is an important position anyway. But when you're looking at outside zone, you could argue that obviously left tackle, and after your left tackle, your center is the most important position on that offensive line. And I feel like if they get, say, somebody like James Daniels in free agency, and now Connor McGovern looks to be the weak link on that chain, I feel like the worst place you want a weak link on your chain when you run outside zone is at the center position. So if they could get rid of him and bring in somebody like Ryan Jensen, that would be huge. And if they could bring in somebody like Linderbaum, that would be amazing. I would love that. And like, I can't believe I actually hesitated between Linderbaum and Hamilton, but the fact is I do have Hamilton ranked higher, and I just was trying to like kind of make sense of that. But I also love what you said, DA. The safety class is just way deeper.
Very good.
And like, I mean, how many elite centers are in the league? Like maybe one, maybe two. So if you could get one in an outside zone scheme with a young quarterback, dude, let's do it.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead, James. Go ahead.
Yeah. Can I say something outrageous right now? Or do you want to say something before I like kind of
change? No. I want you to go. Light it on fire.
All right,
go ahead.
All right. Is Quinnen Williams that much better than Devontae Wyatt
right now?
No.
James,
I want you to know they are the same age.
You don't get to talk. You like Jaquan Brisker. That dude's
okay.
Jaquan Brisker is very close to collecting AARP checks, is what James is saying.
I mean, yeah, Devontae Wyatt's going to be a nice 24 on draft day. So
That's wild.
That's a nice Mike McCagden special. Javonte Wyatt's not even the best defensive lineman on his team, so no. The third.
Ooh, Meigs. Let's go to that side of
the ball. Yeah, Jordan Davis is better than Devontae Wyatt, and so is Carter, too.
And granted, I don't think the Jets are going to take an interior defensive line. But let's talk about the interior defensive line, just in case, fans get their wish and we cut Sheldon Rankins and we need another, D tackle or whatever. So who is the best interior defensive lineman in this class? Meigs, I'll start with you.
It's Jordan Davis. It's like, dude, he's literally Galactus. Like, he's 6'8". He moves like a jungle cat. His athletic testing is ridiculous. Everyone keeps talking about his snap counts, right? He's a two-down player. Did you see the Georgia defense? Do you see how deep they are? The whole reason he didn't play 35, 40 snaps a game is because that team is maybe the best defense I've seen, and probably best defense since the early 2000s Miami defenses. They have studs all over the board. They keep them fresh. They rotate them. Why? Because they could, not because he can't play. He's awesome. Jordan Davis, if Jordan Davis doesn't go in the top 15, it's a mistake. That guy's going to be a stud.
And understand, Meek saying that, he was also right about Christian Barmore, which I hate.
I know. Yeah, trust me. Yeah. Also, DA, just a little tip for you. This year's Christian Barmore, UConn's Travis Jones.
Yes, Meeks. Yes, yes, yes. I think to Meeks's point about, you know, him rotating snaps, and understand Georgia did that because their defense was good. It's not like Quinnen Williams rotating snaps where it's just, you know, because he's not that good. James, who's the best interior defensive lineman in this class?
Look, I think it's probably Jordan Davis. I've kind of come full circle on this. Yeah. But yeah. I will say, like, Jordan Davis, not very comparable to Quinnen. Mm-hmm. Devontae Wyatt, however, is. And I think he's a really good player, and I don't know.
Joe, I don't hate that take.
Listen, I was kind of leaning towards Devontae Wyatt as well. I think he's like I think he could be a really special three technique in a league. I like the way he uses his hands. I like his pursuit towards the quarterback. But man, after seeing Jordan Davis do that at the combine, I was like, oh my God, this is unreal. This is insane. And I'm starting to agree with Meeks that, you know, maybe he was just a two-down player because of how deep they were. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's like, I don't know how he's going to be used. I feel like if the Jets had like the old school Rex 3-4, he's just a perfect person to play that Chris Jenkins role and just absolutely demolish people.
Right in the middle of the formation.
Yeah, I mean, like,
Jordan Davis, you can build your run defense around Jordan Davis. You just need him and you're going to have a good run defense.
What if we traded Quinnen for like some picks, drafted Jordan Davis?
You want to go the 49ers route where they traded DeForest Buckner and they drafted Javon Kinlaw.
Yeah,
right?
Someone's going to give us 13 overall for Quinnen. I'll take it today.
You know, hysterical. James, you just said run defense doesn't matter, and now you want to build like a defensive line around like a run defense.
All right. Here's the thing. I'm not sure. Travon Walker, he had this one sexy rep against Michigan where it looked like it was a teach tape from like a drill video. But Jordan Davis is like actually insane, yeah, like on a different level.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a difference. Jordan Davis is a baller, man. I think Walker a lot right now is a lot of projection. Like it's a lot of like, well, if everything goes right, this is where he could be, right? And you know, Meeks, we were talking in the Slack, and Meeks had said, you know, he kind of, it was you that used Jadeveon Clowney as like a reference point. I think Joe, you said it. I wouldn't take Jadeveon Clowney at 4 right now. So like for me, I'm just like, I don't know. That's rich, but Davis, his combine, man, was just, for a man his size to run like a, you know, like a tight end out there. Like I think I even tweeted, I was like, yo, put him at running back. Who's gonna stop him? Just put him at running back. It's a really good interior defensive line class, which is great because the Jets don't need one right now. But to Meeks's point, listen, man, the Bengals could call today and offer 31 for Quinnen Williams, and I do that. Like, let's just wrap this up, move this on. Like, you know, because I think we're nearing Leonard Williams territory with Quinnen, and not in terms of production, but in terms of like, well, if he just gets this, he's going to be better. If he just gets this, he's going to be better. And I get really tired of hearing that. Like, I'm a year away from getting tired of hearing that about Zach, to be honest. Like, oh, well, you know, if we just get him 5 all pros up front, he's going to be functional as a starter. I'm like, listen, man, like at some point come on, we gotta make this work. Meeks, I see your face. I think you want to say something about that.
Yeah, I'm leaving my Zach Wilson takes alone for tonight. You know, we're gonna get the receivers, we'll get the offensive linemen. Zach's gonna be fine. But yeah, you know, Joe said this last week. I agreed with him that they picked up the 5th-year option on Quinnen because having Quinnen on basically like a 2-year, $50 million deal is good business, and he's definitely worth the contract over that 2 years. But he's gonna need a big step up in play to warrant any extension going further than that. But Joe, I know you got some, I know you've been percolating over there. I know you got a take for us. I know. Come on, give it to me.
I mean, not really. You guys kind of took it. It was about Travon Walker.
Oh, did you say hitting Travon?
I feel like Travon Walker right now, a lot of people are projecting him potentially to the Jets at 3
or 3 to Houston.
Well, I feel like that's borderline disgusting. Like, I'm sorry, you know, like, yeah, he blew up the combine, but I feel like that has like bust written all over it. I don't care what he met when it came to like the metrics. And I do value the metrics. I mean, there's some benchmarks that definitely correlate to success. I completely get that, you know? So, and I know James had mentioned the RAS and listen, it's hard not to notice that. At the same time, and I think you mentioned it in the Slack, DA, that I think we need to find a player right now who's a little bit safer. I don't think the Jets should be spending a top five pick on a player with so much kind of question marks. I mean, he has literally like no pass rush plan. Now, I do think he uses his length very well, like really well. And I think that there, you know, is potential there to develop into a better prospect. There's no question about it. But you can't take him top five. I mean, I feel bad. You know, I know some of our listeners really like him. Specifically, one of our listeners, Michael Christopher, has DM'd me a couple of times about Trayvon Walker. But dude, I think it would just be a bad move. Now, if he turns out to be a great player, awesome. You know, he could be a great player for somebody else. Okay. We need to go a little safer with that pick for sure.
Joe said, love don't live here anymore. That's what Joe just said for all our listeners. Love don't live here anymore. Guys, let's go to wide receiver. Okay. James, I'm going to start with you. Who is the perfect wide receiver for Zach Wilson in this class? The guy that you know, listen, man, if I draft him, Zach's going to be all right. Who's the guy for you?
Mm. I mean, it's tough to separate out how I rank them from mm-hmm. like more of a stylistic thing for Zach.
Yep.
But if I were going for more of that stylistic fit, I would probably say like Drake London. Or I know like you could argue, I know Joe is like rejoicing in the background, throwing up his hands like he's at church. No, I mean, I could see Burks too, but obviously it hasn't been a very good week for Burks where he was like benching, I think like half of the reps that Will Parkinson can do. Not exactly the strongest showing after he's been training for like 3 months, but I would say Drake London. I mean, the contested catch is there. The yak is there and he's super young too. So
yeah, Joe, I'm going to go to you because I think you're going to say Drake and then I'm going to go to Meigs.
I feel like we are in church. Preach, James, preach. It's a beautiful thing. I think when you look at this offense, you have to find players that also fit Zach Wilson, right? The 49ers offense likes to attack the middle of the field, but Zach is a guy who really likes to throw outside. Who's better at catching those outside balls than Drake London in this draft?
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Nobody. But Drake also has that ability to be a big slot, catch the ball over the middle field, and get you that yak as well. There really isn't a better prospect when it comes to Zach Wilson than Drake London. I mean, it's just a fact. Thank you, James. I appreciate you.
Meigs,
it's like we don't have to keep doing this. We literally are New York Jets fans. We're in a division where the Buffalo Bills built an entire receiving core of guys who are the best trait is how much separation they get. So their inaccurate quarterback could get better at accuracy because of all the separation that they created gives them a bigger window than a wide receiver who's great at contested catches and making that play with his above the like above the rim skills. Like, I've seen that. It doesn't work. If Baltimore took that approach, Lamar would be doing much better because they got too many guys trying to be jump ball guys, not enough guys to create enough separation. Like, this answer is easy. It's Garrett Wilson. It's always Garrett Wilson. He's the best receiver in the draft. If they get him, Zach Wilson might actually be good. This is big. Him and Elijah Moore, oof, oof. Jets will actually be fun to watch.
All right, Meeks, we've talked about this, right? Yeah. Drake London plays at USC. He's playing with a quarterback who loves the YOLO ball. If you're watching the actual film, he's going against press. You see him stacking quarterbacks. You see him getting that extra step. His quarterback just, he puts him in those positions. There's no question about it. And as far as separation, I don't know if you watched him on these slants or on these short to intermediate routes. Dude gets plenty of separation. He is a nasty and underrated route runner. So I think you're kind of like underselling him a bit when, as far as the separation goes, because he definitely knows where and when to run and turn. And he's a dynamic player. Like, I would have liked to see him run the 40 I just to see it. But if he ran in the 4.5s, which I believe he will, that's good enough, man.
He's going to run 4.6 too. That doesn't bother me about Drake London.
What's up?
He's going to run 4.6 too. That doesn't bother me about Drake London. My point is that the best receiver for Zach is the one who consistently gets open the most. And the reason I picked Garrett Wilson is because I believe that to be Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I'm with Meigs on this. I think you want to get – we're talking about, like, you want to get a safer prospect, right? And I think Garrett Wilson will come off the street and go for 1,000 yards next year, like, right out of the gate. I think that when we – the two picks, the 4 and 10 or wherever they end up picking, it's not for swings with, for guys that – you have to worry about the scheme they're in. And I worry more about Drake London if he doesn't end up in a good scheme. Whereas, like, I think Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, I think I can take them and put them anywhere, 32 teams, and I think they're going to produce. London isn't that surefire guy for me, but I do like London's game. I think where London helps Zach, to your point, Joe, is the contested catches where Zach decides to put throw up these ambulance balls, right, and get his receivers killed in the middle of the damn field, right? But Garrett Wilson – listen, you want to make a quarterback's job easier? Get the guy that's going to get open in the middle of the damn field. And Zach's going to hit him every time. And that's Garrett Wilson. I think with Drake London, here's, and Meigs mentioned Baltimore. I think Baltimore's a really good situation because Baltimore for a long time was getting Lamar these short guys, right? Like just like really little receivers, right? Who, you know, like struggled to create separation on their own, but had speed or whatever. And then they go and get him Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman led the Ravens in first downs for their receivers. And he didn't play until what, week 7, week 8, and led the Ravens in first downs for receivers because he's a big target that Lamar could find. Right. So to that point, I see your point about getting Zach or Drake London when you already have a mismatch nightmare and Elijah Moore, who's a really good route runner. Corey Davis, who, again, I know he had a crappy year, but Corey Davis is still a pretty good route runner. So I get that. But I think Garrett Wilson, because Garrett Wilson attacks the field vertically, gets open consistently, and he's safe. I want to get Zach a guy that's safe. I don't want to get a guy that I have to worry about, like, man, I got to manufacture touches for you because you can't get open in the next at the next level.
Yeah, I will agree with that, D. I think that Garrett is a safer prospect. Yeah. But I also feel like people really aren't dissecting his game like they are Drake London's. Like, Garrett Wilson does have some issues against press. He also has some issues sometimes with catching the ball. He's not really a perfect prospect. Now, I do love him. He is my 1B to Drake London being the 1A. And I mean, he was my wide receiver 1 for the longest time. I just kind of fell in love with Drake London's tape. But I do think that Drake has more, you know, potential to bust. I will agree with that.
Yeah.
But as far as like a fit and like what Zach is good at right now, I still think it's Drake London for sure.
I will also say, I know he hasn't had the best week, Meeks, before I go to you, but Treylon Burks is still a guy that I would take, man, because the tape is good. The tape is good. I know the reps weren't as much as Will Parkinson's, right? But for those of you that do not know, Will is also 25 and the best shape of his life. He just got engaged. He needs to be benching the way that he benches, right? So shout out to Will. But I always worry, and we've talked about this before, like, again, with Treylon Walker, dudes that shoot up boards like that always worry me. I tend to go back to the film. Meigs, I think there's a perfect segue to your hot take that you said you were going to draft about the combine, but you wanted to say something about the wide receivers first.
Well, yeah, I know. I kind of got two takes that I'm going to get off tonight. So I'll start with, but the first one, this the combine, that these combine warriors, like Drake London's pipe, Drake London's thing, I think what really hurt him the most and my biggest issue we're about concern about him is just about staying healthy, because Drake London was awesome for 8 games, but then he broke his ankle. And that's an injury that I think he's going to, this isn't like a Liz Frank or anything. I think it's going to be fine. He's going to run at his pro day. But that's a serious thing that I worry about, because we've seen those bigger receivers struggle with foot injuries, with staying healthy, because, you know, bigger they are, the harder they fall. But there's a combine guy that just keeps getting all this hype that people are like, I don't know how he gets out of the first round. And it's Christian Watson. I don't get it. He went to the Senior Bowl. You know, every single guy that plays in the FCS or plays in Division II who goes to the Senior Bowl, everyone's question is, oh, can they hack it with the top guys? And Christian Watson was making plays in the one-on-ones, which is, football's not played 7-on-7, it's not played one-on-ones, but 11-on-11 in pads. And this reminds me so much of this Denzel Mims Senior Bowl rise. Like, great combine, sweet athlete, big body, fluid mover. And, like, I watched Denzel Mims at Baylor. He didn't look like a guy who ran 4.38. He didn't look like a guy who ran 6.66 in the three cone. I believe that's what his three cone was. And Christian Watson gives me those same vibes. Everyone on Jets Twitter always says, wait till the second round. It's a deep wide receiver class. You know, you can take, like, he's like the hot trendy name to take at 35. The Jets take him, I think, is a massive mistake.
Couldn't agree more. Let's go to corner on the other side. Joe, I'm going to start with you, because this has been also a contentious conversation in the Slack. I will tell you, Derek Stingley is still my cornerback one. And I don't care what any of you say. Cornerback two for me is Trent McDuffie. Shout out to my guy Meigs. We've been on this train for 4 months now, baby. But Joe, I know you disagree. How are you breaking Meigs' heart by naming your cornerback two?
Well, Derek Stingley is my CB1-2. Dalvin, I think he's the most talented cornerback in the draft. Hands down, there isn't a more talented player, and I don't even think that's disputable. But yeah, I had Trent McDuffie at CB2 as well, and I feel like it's all about the film, right? More than it is about the metrics, but there are some things, and like I mentioned earlier, that do correlate to success, and one of them happens to be arm length. And Trent McDuffie has like 29-inch arms, and I'm sorry, but he's got a little T-Rex in him, and that's given me some reservations. You know, Ahmad Gardner checks all the boxes when it comes to these kind of metrics, all those things that tell you that this guy could be a Pro Bowler. And I'm starting to just have some worries about my guy, Trent. Now, he's a fantastic football player, and I think he could play in multiple schemes. But I think Gardner is a little bit more scheme versatile and just has those measurables that just make you feel more comfortable about selecting him at a higher pick. And that's why I had to slide him into CB2. Nothing really against Trent. I'm sorry I said he had T-Rex arms, but point is, like, he does. He's got alligator arms. Like, you know, he's probably not paying the check when you go out to dinner. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Meigs, what are your quarter rank?
I mean, T-Rex is like the strongest dinosaur, if you remember correctly, Joe. So I took that as a compliment.
All right, well, he's still got little arms.
Fair enough. I mean, Trent McDuffie's got the most sound. Like, honestly, if all things were if I didn't make this mistake last year and looked over Caleb Farley's injuries and looked over that back injury and then the torn ACL and then he tore his ACL again in his rookie year, I would probably have Derek Stingley CB1. But Derek Stingley has a Liz Frank injury. A foot injury for a cornerback is a big deal. Like, there's no beating around the bush. Derek Stingley has struggled to stay on the field for now 2 straight years. His 2019 film is better than any cornerback in this class by a country mile. There's nothing better. Those who try to say Derek Stingley wasn't dominant his freshman year, like, go watch that national championship game, because he took away an entire side of the field. Wasn't close. Elite ball skills, elite athlete. Reminds me a lot of Marshawn Lattimore, who had his own injury concerns coming out of Ohio State. A lot of people have been stealing my comp to Snow. DA knows. I said that first. That was like in November. But I love Trent McDuffie. I just think he's just safer in that mind. I just think he's going to be a really good football player, and that's why I have him CB1. Sauce is CB3. Like, these are all really good players, to be honest. If the Jets getting them at 10, I wouldn't have any issues with it.
Meigs, do you remember when you thought Kyrie Elam was better than Sauce? And
he's not. It's not. Dude, Kyrie Elam's on the cool throne, Joe. You ran that 4.39, you know.
Do you remember when I bodied you on that episode?
Joe, I was trying to be nice to you that day, all right? I don't know. You were telling me how down you were before the episode. I was trying to let you have that one, but you won't let it go.
I'm just glad that you kind of came to your senses and put Kyrie Elam at CB5.
CB4. They're not that far apart.
Well, I thought you had him at CB5, but I think that's a decent.
I think I have him CB4. I don't know. I think that's a decent spot for. I think I have him 4, then Booth is 5.
Booth is 5. So perfect segue.
Yeah, James, get your Booth takes off.
Yeah, facts. I was just spending the last like 30 seconds figuring out how like contrarian I want to be. Look, I think Stingley's good. Andrew Booth is my number two cornerback in this class. The only cornerback with an elite ability in this class. The only cornerback, and that's his ball skills. Like, dude is insane when the ball's in the air. Better than Stingley, better than Gardner, better than McDuffie, who I don't even get any of the hype behind at all. You know, I'm sure he'll make a nice CB2. Andrew Booth is the one who's going to be the elite player in the NFL. Like, I feel so confident. You can just take that to the bank. Talk to me in 4 years when he's a first-team All-Pro with, like, 10 picks. So
James said, I'll tell you where to send the check. That's what James just said. I'll tell you where to send the check. Go ahead, Jim.
You said that he had better ball skills than Stingley. I remember a time when you said that Stingley could have had like 24 interceptions his freshman year.
Yeah, he dropped so much stuff because he doesn't have Andrew Booth's hands, Joe.
Okay, all right.
There is no one, trust me, there is no one who has better ball skills than Andrew Booth, who had like 9 pass deflections in 3 years at Clemson, just so you know. Man loves getting his hand on the ball. God, it's like J.C. Horn all over again.
Whoa, Meigs.
Yeah, D.A., you're not ready for that. Everyone thinks J.C. Horn's good because Corey Davis cooked him. He played the Saints, and then he broke his foot, and people act like that was a good rookie season. You're not ready for that take.
I mean, I would agree with that take, though. I would agree with that.
I think we all know that I'm the only one here who had Patrick Surtain as CB1. So we'll just, you know, we can maybe move on from that conversation.
That's fair. But you are also the only one that has Drake London as wide receiver one. And that's going to age really, really poorly, Joe. That's going to
We'll see. I think your Treylon Burks as wide receiver one might age a little worse than that.
So you'll see in my new book board that Chris Olave is wide receiver one. You'll see that Olave.
I respect
Olave is wide receiver one. Yeah, I don't care so much about the combine, but listen, the stuff that's been coming out about Treylon, about like his work ethic and like how he didn't prepare for the combine, that has me worried. Like that, I'm like, all right, man, like. You can't have me looking bad out here in these Twitter streets. Like, I can't be doing that. I want to get the hottest take from you guys leading into the draft. Just like a take that, you know, listen, you plant your flag on it today. When we are back together in 3 years, we are drinking whiskey and tequila and gin and everything that Joe has in his liquor cabinet. And we are coming together saying, look, guys, this is where we were right. Joe, I'm going to start with you because I know you have something that you're like, listen, I feel great about this. Go ahead.
You're totally incorrect about that because I have nothing right now. So let me think about something. Let's pass it to James. I feel like James is definitely going to come on here with some hot takes.
I do. I don't think it's going to be super controversial, though. So Jermaine Johnson is going to be the Brian Burns of this year's draft. Meaning, stylistically, they're very different. But edge rusher heavy draft where everybody's like, this dude's really good. Like he pretty much can do everything. Like, why isn't he a top 5 pick? And then like fast forward, like he's actually good. So
Brian Burns is the best edge rusher in that damn class. He's the best damn edge rusher in that class.
Second.
All right. Anyway, this is Nick Bosa on this podcast.
Don't you disrespect Nick Bosa on that.
This is why I love James. Because James always seems to just like do a 180 or come full circle, whatever you want to call it. I remember in the Slack specifically him mentioning how he thinks Jermaine Johnson is bad, but Joe likes him. And then I think, D.A., you were like, yeah, I got him ranked 90th. And I'm like, no, he's like really good. And then I mentioned somebody, Sam Williams. I'm like, Sam Williams has some potential too. He's like one of the only guys that bodied Charles Cross. He gave Kenyon Green some fits.
He did. And James I like comes Kenyon. And says, too.
That guy sucks, you know? So I'm glad, James, hopefully you're going to get on the Sam Williams train. I think he's got some baggage that needs to be addressed.
But I do appreciate the Jermaine Johnson take, and I actually have one of my own.
A lot of people had Kenyon Green as their IOL or their offensive guard one for a very long time, and I was on that Zion Johnson train, man. I said he was OG one from the very beginning, and he absolutely crushed the combine, checked every single box, and when it's all said and done, he will be the best guard in this draft. And I feel like Kenyon Green, I hate to say it, but I think he's going to slip to the second round, my friend. I think maybe that's a hot take. I'm not sure, but didn't look Kenyon Greenish at the combine. In fact, I was like, who is this man? This isn't the guy I saw on film. And I think that's going to really kind of rub some teams the wrong way. And unfortunately, I think that it's going to cost him in his pocket for sure.
Meigs.
I just want to say one thing about Kenyon Green. I saw his measurements, and he's got over 34-inch arms. Why is Kenyon Green not getting tackle hype, especially with from a versatility standpoint? Because that dude's better than Trevor Penning, and he's way better than Bernard Raymond, who's like 28.
Hands down. And
I would much rather try Kenyon Green at tackle before taking one of those guys in the first round. But
you know, when you watch Kenyon Green at tackle, he's very raw. He specifically is susceptible to guys who have really good pass rush moves, especially when, say, for instance, they're trying to bull rush him. He always tries to meet power with power. And what happens is they end up splashing him to the ground. And all the film that I've watched him at tackle, just savvy guys just know how to set him up. And I feel like that's probably a reason why they kind of moved him inside. And they said, well, you're kind of better in this position. And I think that is probably the reason why he's not like a permanent tackle even in college, because he definitely has those moments. But Meigs, you could be right. This guy's played all over the offensive line. I mean, I think maybe that even hindered him. That could have prevented him from even excelling at one particular position. So I can still see him being good, but Zion Johnson is greater.
Don't disagree with that at all. I love Zion, but the spicy takes. I mean, I was just gonna make a joke about the quarterback class because they all do suck. RDA. I know you're a big Malik guy, but I'm just gonna come out and say this: Devin Lloyd is gonna be the best defensive player in this draft in 3 years. That's my hot take. It's spicy. Does part of me believe it? Yes. But I just think Devin Lloyd, everyone's souring on him because of his 40 time. I think he's the next wave of these coverage linebackers who does everything well and is going to be a fantastic football player from the jump.
You know what? I actually have a hot take here that I want to share, and I think I'm going to forget it if I don't say it right now. This might be spicy. Obviously, we're not in the quarterback market. I feel like James might like this one. But there is a new QB1 in town. His name is Carson Strong. When you look at quarterbacking, and I've watched a little bit more of Carson Strong recently, the two most important things are decision-making and accuracy. Mm-hmm. Nobody is a better decision-maker, and nobody is a more accurate quarterback in those particular situations than Carson Strong. He is QB1 in this draft. That said, all the quarterbacks in this draft suck, right? And nobody should be getting drafted in the first round. Nobody should be getting clapped. The earliest a quarterback should be selected in this draft is round 2. And I firmly believe that.
So I like you know what I have figured out about your quarterbacks, Joe. You have a type, man, because you like Mac Jones last year too. You have a type quarterback.
I also like Justin Field, right? So I do have a type.
You have a type. But also, I mean, again, none of them were good last year. They did not play well at all. But because this is the first time that I'm back with you guys in 7 months, I'm going to give you 3 takes because there's 3 of you. One, I'm going to drop the Malik Willis take here. And he's the only quarterback, that I think should even be remotely talked about going in round 1. And I'm with you, Joe. I wouldn't take any of them in round 1, but he's the only one because I feel like I'm talking about like Zach Wilson and Justin Fields and even Trevor Lawrence with the off platform throwing and the athleticism and all that stuff. But I think Malik Willis represents that new age of the NFL quarterback. And he goes to a situation like, you know, Detroit, where he can sit behind Goff for a year, or Atlanta, where he can sit behind Ryan for a year. I think he's going to be good. And I feel very good about that. Okay. And as James so likes to remind people, I nailed the Lamar Jackson pick. So trust that. Number 2, safety 1 in this class is Daxton Hill, not Kyle Hamilton. Please understand that, okay? The best safety comes out of Michigan, not Notre Dame. He's the best safety in this class. And that's why I have a very real issue when I hear folks talking about taking Kyle Hamilton at 4. That bugs me, man. That bugs me because when you look at a guy like Dax Hill or Petre and then Kyle Hamilton, and Meigs, you're a guy from Georgia, right? LC, right? There are a lot of really good, Veron McKinley III from Oregon, a lot of really good safeties in this class. Joe, you can shrug, you can do that all you want. There's a lot of really good safeties in this class. And I think we're going to look back in 3 years and realize that Kyle Hamilton was not generational. He was not Ed Reed. He was not Troy Polamalu. He was not that guy that folks were lifting up for. And it reminds me a lot of, you know, we were having this conversation last year when we were leading up to the draft, and folks just can't say a prospect is good. You have to say that he is Quentin Nelson for Elijah Vera Tucker. You have to say that he is Antonio Brown for Elijah Moore. You have to say all these, like these insane superfluous takes to try to justify like where a guy was taken. Like, listen, man, Elijah Moore is probably going to be Brandon Cooks. You know what Brandon Cooks has done the last 9 years? nine straight 1,000-yard season. That's what Brandon Cooks has done, or seven straight 1,000-yard season. So I think Dax Hill is going to be the guy that he's the best safety in this class, and I think you're going to see that in 3 years. And third, I love your take, Joe, about, you know, Jermaine Johnson, right? Right, that was yours. Like, he's going to be the best defensive player in this class, right? Is that what you said?
I think that was James.
James, that was yours. I like that take. I don't hate that take, although I did have him at 90 in September, Joe. I did have him ranked 90 in September. But I'm going to say we're going to be talking about Kayvon Thibodeau as a guy. And the comp that I had, and Meeks, you remember your comp for KT? You remember what the comp was that you had?
Yeah.
What was it?
Chandler
Jones, right? We're talking about a guy who now, 33 years of age, is still sacking quarterbacks. I think Kayvon Thibodeau has the potential to be that good. And I think he's a guy that racks up at least two Defensive Player of the Year awards in the next 5 years. I think he's that good. And I think he's going to be that good. And when he lands in New York with the Jets opposite Carl Lawson, I think that's what you're going to see. So those are my three hottest takes. Two on the defensive side of the ball. You get one from Malik Willis because, again, black quarterbacks get the short end of the stick. Not with me, baby. Not with me. Also, I got to say, to the Jets fan who said we should draft Malik Willis at 10 and use him as Taysom Hill, I hated every second of that argument. Every second of that argument. I have now muted you to oblivion. I will never talk to you again. All right. Final words, guys. At 4 and 10, when we are at the draft, pick 4 and pick 10, if we are staying there, who do the Jets take? Joe, I start with you.
I'm going Ekwonu, and I'm going Drake London.
Whew. Big icky, who, if you remember, I had him as OT1 in September, and Meeks had the nerve to ask me what Evan Neal did to me to rank him fifth. Go ahead, Meeks.
Yeah, I did. Now Evan Neal's OT3. But Charles Cross is OT1, don't you forget it.
Hey, new DeBrickashaw Ferguson. I love Charles Cross, man.
For me, 4 and 10, it's what I say every week. I'll say it. KT at 4, Garrett Wilson at 10. Send it in.
That's it. Run it to the podium. James, who you got, 4 and 10?
And KT at 4 and trade down at 10.
James said there will be no pick at 10 tonight.
Yeah. Hold on a second. James, pick a player, man. Come on, bro.
James is loyal to the study, damn player.
I want to trade down at 10 too, but I still took Drake London. Like, come on. If you're picking a player, who is it?
I would say like Garrett Wilson.
All right.
Okay. I like it. I too think they're going to trade back from 10, just an FYI. I don't think they make the pick, but in the spirit of me being back for this episode of draft season, I will give you, I think at 4, I think it is KT. I do not think there is a snowball's chance in hell of Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas passing on adding another edge rusher. And I also do believe, Joe, I think the Jets walk out of free agency with Ryan Jensen and James Daniels. I think that they fortify that interior offensive line. And I think that's why they don't take an offensive lineman at 4. And at 10, I don't think it's a corner. I'm with you, Meeks. It's Garrett Wilson. I think it's Kayvon and Garrett Wilson. I think that the Jets, I think the theme of this offseason is going to be to get Zach Wilson help. If you added Ryan Jensen and James Daniels to this offensive line, I think this goes from a line that with a healthy Mekhi Becton could be, you know, 13, 14 maybe in the league. You add Jensen and Daniels, you're talking about a line that really does have, if everybody's healthy, you're looking at top 8, top 7 potential. That's a really good offensive line on paper. And they're going to want to give Zach every chance to succeed. You add Garrett Wilson to Corey Davis and Elijah Moore. That is a really good young trio. That's a really good young trio.
If they address free agency, like you said, with, say, Jensen and Daniels, then I would most certainly want them to go Kayvon Thibodeau on that spot. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, but listen, if they took
Garrett Wilson at 10 over Drake London, I'd be perfectly fine with that, too. I love Garrett Wilson.
Oh, man, Joe, that was the perfect time in my return for you to say Joe Douglas would be dead to you. That was it. That was the runway for you to say.
I was the first person on here that had Garrett Wilson as wide receiver 1.
I remember.
These are just the facts. I still do love the guy. So I'm not going to be upset if they take him. I just, you know, I'm thinking about Zach. You guys are thinking about the player you like the most. And I'm thinking about Zach Wilson because I care about him, you know,
because you want him to succeed.
I don't see Joe. I don't let mediocre players get in the way of what I want. All right. Yeah. Zach might be
Meeks,
good. Who knows?
Meeks, you had Devontae Wyatt as your wide receiver 1 last year. I mean, the amount
Devontae Wyatt is Devontae.
I mean, Devontae Smith is your wide receiver 1 last year.
Yeah, Devontae Smith is good.
The amount of mediocre players that you have in top positions is absolutely absurd. Okay. You even had, who was your CB1 last year? Give me a break. All right. What are you talking about? You also said Zach Wilson was going to throw 30 touchdown
Zach
passes
Wilson
this year.
Mediocre, not Drake, and you're mad at me?
Because Joe loves Zach Wilson. That's
Joe loves
why.
Zach Wilson.
That Zach Wilson was going to throw 30 touchdown passes this year.
Okay, Joe.
Right? I don't want to throw D.A. under the bus, but he thought he was only going to have 5 interceptions. I'm like, wait till he does
that. No, I said 7. Let's be clear.
I said
7. 5 is low, man. 5 is low, but I said 7.
Let's not talk about the takes out of here, because I think the listeners know. They know, all right? That James's name is Fuego, but the hot takes are over here.
I'm starting to think that Joe Horning is your burner, Joe. He says the things to us that you won't say to us until we're off the air. I think that's what's happening here.
Joe Horning is probably our most loyal listener. Love that guy.
Shout out to Joe H, man. Shout out to Joe H. Guys, it has been an absolute pleasure rocking with you guys tonight for what can only be described as, you know, when like the Shield got back together, or if the Lakers decided to keep Kobe and Shaq and really build around them. That's what this feels like. It has been an absolute pleasure. I'm just incredibly proud of all the work that you guys have done. It's been amazing. Thank you guys for welcoming me back. Dylan, you need to come back to get your lashings from me for this Jahan Dotson nonsense. Step up to the plate, young fella. Come and get your lashings. But thank you guys for tuning in to TOJ's draft season. As always, make sure to check out the TOJ draft season site this upcoming season. We're going to have a bunch of stuff on it. Shout out to Will for all the great work he's done on TOJ Pod. Shout out to Steven Zantz and Steven Russo for the return to TOJ Live. We are the four horsemen of the TOJ draft coverage. And good night.